This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Today in the studio, I've got George in studio as well. How are you doing, George?
How's it?
Yeah, good. I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, can you turn my headphones up? Oh, wait, I can do it myself, yeah.
You can turn your headphones up there.
You should just do it your freaking self.
Yeah, exactly. Just push the button. There we go. Hang on a second.
Turn the knob.
Now can you hear me? Yeah, exactly. We're just trying to get everybody sorted out here. There we go, guys. Right, loud and clear. Fazana, how are you?
Good, thanks, and you, Dad?
Yes, fine, thanks. And Lawrence, how are you doing, bud?
Wonderful.
Good, good, good. Well, you can follow us on our social media platforms. You can hashtag AutoCentral or at AutoTraderSA on Facebook and Twitter. And yeah, let's jump straight into it, guys. So I see we know that when it comes to buying a vehicle, obviously service from dealerships is really, really important. And the 2018 South African Dealer Satisfaction Index reveals which manufacturers are best and worst in South Africa. So obviously, like I was saying, service is really, really important. And I think if we have a look at the car buying journey, we know that a lot of it is now happening online, but you still have that experience and you still want that tangible experience when you're walking into the dealership to actually, test drive the car. And I think the service that you get, from the dealership is really, really important to whether a consumer decides whether they're going to purchase the vehicle or not. I mean, would you guys agree with that statement?
Absolutely.
So if we just have a look here quickly, a total of 33 independently researched brands form part of the survey. A total of 1,005 responses were received, and 840 of these were for passenger and light commercial vehicles. It's really nice to know that the industry overall average has improved from last year, from 72.9% in 2017 to 74.5% in 2018. It's really, really nice to know that I think there were 8 brands that received gold status, which is 75% and above, which is really, really nice to know that there are companies out there that really take service seriously. So if we just have a look at the positions here, so in terms of first, second, and third, Toyota came first, then Mercedes-Benz, followed by Honda, Mazda, Volvo, Suzuki, Ford, Volkswagen, Lexus, BMW, Nissan, Datsun, Subaru, Kia, Renault, Audi, Mahindra, Haval, Mitsubishi, GWM, Jaguar, Land Rover, FCA, Honda, and Peugeot. And I think what was interesting out of that is if I have a look at, brands that I would expect because of their premium nature, like the likes of Audi, the likes of Land Rover, the likes of Jaguar, these guys are scoring in the, Audi scored 71%, and then Jaguar, Land Rover 60.1% respectively. I'd seriously expect more from dealerships like that. I mean, you've recently purchased a new vehicle. I mean, what was the service like that you got? Was it?
I'm a different consumer.
No, sure.
Because of who I work for, so I'm a very different consumer.
Okay.
It's not really fair to use me as a sample. I don't think. I generally kind of know what I want.
Yes.
And then go and get it.
Get it. Yeah.
My car. I didn't. I bought before even seeing it.
Correct.
So I'm a little bit of a different consumer.
Okay. But I mean, these kind of brands, I'd expect from an Audi, Land Rover, and Jaguar that they should be up there in the, 75s, and really, outperforming and putting a lot of, and I'm not saying that they don't, but clearly, the results speak for themselves. So it's just, I wonder what it is. Those are high price ticket items. You should be getting, top quality service. I mean, I'm generalizing here because I haven't visited every single Land Rover and Jag dealership in the country, but,
Well, look, I'm looking at the top 10 here and I'm not really seeing a lot of surprises. A lot of these brands have been putting a lot of effort into their customer service, but then there are a couple that I'm sitting going, really?
Yeah.
Seriously, guys, you need to up your game a bit because BMW's outside the top 10.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if if like labeling these brands as having a satisfaction survey or not is entirely fair, because because remember, most franchise dealers in the country are not run by the OEM.
Yes.
So, for instance, you know, the Toyota dealerships are not run by Toyota South Africa.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, there is no direct model in South Africa. You know, example of a direct model would be Tesla.
Okay.
The manufacturer sells directly to the consumer. Yes. So you know, to really kind of label BMW as being outside of the top 10, is that fair? You know, it you'd have to get a good sample set of BMW dealerships.
Well, this is kind of where my, you know, it was a train of thought that I went. I mean, 1,005 respondents is not a hell of a lot if you really in the bigger scheme of things. I mean, are you getting a true reflection of what South Africa are really what South Africans are really thinking by only sampling 1,005 people?
No. And the thing is, so
statistically, I think it is representative of a sample set,
sure,
or should I say of a statistically, I think. It would be representative of a population. However, the number of dealerships, which brand is it skewed to?
Yeah,
you know, if there are, let's say, the 1,000 respondents and 400 of them are like Toyota respondents,
yeah, they're gonna be,
you're going to get almost 50% of the answers being Toyota related.
Yeah.
So,
and they could have checked, you know, for BMW outside one single dealership.
Exactly. So you know, I don't know. I'm not saying that it is or isn't skewed, but I think there should be, you know, a dealership index rather than a brand index.
We actually dig down into the specific dealers.
100 dealerships, yes. 100 BMW dealerships were surveyed, and then another 100 Toyota dealerships were surveyed, and then another. Then you might get a representation, and I think Fazan is exactly right.
Okay, cool. And then nice to see that on the truck side, Hano came out tops with Mercedes-Benz trucks in second, UD trucks, Fuso, Isuzu for Freightliner, and then Tata Commercial. So yeah, interesting to see that. That's kind of what. Well, all in all, I think the industry is in
good shape.
Yeah. which is very, very positive. I don't know if you guys know this, but Justin Bieber's 2.6 million rand Mercedes-Benz SLS AMG broke down in the middle of traffic. Shame. I cried for days. Exactly.
Cry me a river, get a bridge, and get over it.
Yeah, like just deal with it. You know how many people in South Africa break down every single day, and you know, there's no song and dance.
What? He's 23. He's got engaged to this chick. After 2 months now, he's getting married. I think he's got some issues.
So I don't think he took it for its dealer-recommended services.
Yeah, he probably didn't. He probably buys a new car before it has to go in for a service anyway. But it says, Justin Bieber was left red-faced when his Mercedes-Benz AMG broke down on the intersection in New York. The singer, who was accompanied by his fiancée, Hailey Baldwin, looked a bit worried on the side of the road, but was forced to call the police for help and to divert traffic.
Boo-hoo.
Exactly. I mean, I was like, and they made a big thing about it. It's like, oh my God,
this
Justin Bieber broke
news.
Down. Yeah, this, and but you know, I can understand. Think about the paparazzi. Must have had a field day with the soak, you know, standing on the side of the road next to his car, and he probably has never looked under the hood. Well maybe when he bought it.
He's hoping that Merck comes to the party and says, hey, sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, cars break down. I mean, that's just a given.
But he's an SLS AMG.
So it shouldn't break down, is what you're saying.
No.
Yeah, well, maybe he was driving.
Like a jackass.
I would probably put it to
someone
that.
Someone
I know what the reason is, Martin. It's not a freaking electric car.
That's why I broke it. Engine troubles, huh?
You wouldn't have engine troubles because there is no flipping engine.
Yeah. Do you guys, by any chance, without looking at the showrunner, know what an EBAT is? And if I say EBAT, what comes to mind?
Electric battery.
It sounds like something I'd like to apply to the taxi driver who squeezed me off the road just now.
Okay.
Squeezed you off the road.
You want to hit him with an e-bat?
Yep.
Yeah? George, any idea?
I would agree, e-battery.
No, okay. So this is, the e-bat is a evidentiary breath alcohol testing vehicle.
Oh, yes. My boys in Cape Town are doing their thing.
Yeah, boys in Cape Town are doing the thing. They're actually about to roll out another one. So they rolled out one of these e-bat vehicles. It's literally,
it's a mobile laboratory.
It's a mobile lab. And what's nice is they obviously check your breath if you've been drinking and driving, and they can actually the results from this test can actually stand up in a court of law. So you don't have to draw blood and, you know, wait for the results. This is it's instantaneous.
Yeah.
And I think what they what one of the problems is you know, you get pulled over for, you know, or you get questioned. Let's say you've been pulled over for drunk driving. They do the blood test, and you say, "Oh no, I promise I haven't been drinking." And the cops are like, "Well, you have," and it's a Friday night. You are spending the weekend in jail until they get those results. It's not like they let you go.
Well, they've got to take you for blood tests and draw blood, right?
Yes.
You know, so the nice thing about this,
yes,
is your blood alcohol level can't drop.
Yes.
And you'll get busted straight away. Whereas when the cops take you to go and get
the
blood,
that entire time,
while, you know, the longer you can delay it,
yes,
the more your blood alcohol level drops and drops and drops. By the time that needle gets stuck in you, you know, your body's metabolized a lot of the alcohol already, and you could be under the limit.
Correct.
So it's a waste of resource if that does happen.
Yes.
So this is brilliant for those purposes. So on the side of the road, you get busted, and sorry for you.
Absolutely. You know? So, because, I mean, according to the Road Traffic Management Corporation, between 14,000 and 17,000 people are killed on South African roads each year. And 3,000 of those are children, and that's due to alcohol-induced accidents.
Well, you know what I'd like to find out is, I think, just a hunch, I think that falling asleep behind the wheel probably causes more problems than alcohol does, and that's something you can't test for.
Falling asleep, you can't.
I mean, falling asleep behind the wheel because you're drunk.
Nah, man, I'm not talking. Now
you're just talking about someone who's. Martin's
confusing the two.
I took a number of Ubers this weekend, and I love chatting to Uber drivers. Yeah. I really, really do, because you actually get a little bit of who they are and what they're doing.
Yeah. I used to do that a lot.
The one I bitched and moaned for 45 minutes about how terrible life is and how, you know, it was the world is falling to pieces. Off. And I must say, the car that I was in, I sat there going, after a while, I was like, hang on a sec, this looks right. The car was damaged. There were panels missing on some of the doors. You know where you're, like if you adjust an old side mirror, those levers, that plastic casing was missing, the service light was on, the brakes didn't sound great. And this oak was moaning because he's not an owner. He just drives with somebody. And I was like, hang on a sec, this oak's putting my life at danger as well. Like, that car shouldn't be part of the Uber fleet. But, you know, I think, And then subsequent to that, I caught a lift home with a young 24-year-old who had his own car, and he was just on top of the world. He was loving life, and he was very happy with doing what he's doing, and he had a dream to actually have a fleet of vehicles, and it was nice to know. Heads up, I really like chatting to Uber drivers. But back to this, I mean, if you think about
applies to Uber drivers, drivers,
fatigue, being tired.
How much of a problem is that, and what are we doing to address it? Because it's not something you can test for.
You can't test for it.
Like, you know, how does a cop stop along, how tired are you, mister?
Well, we'll get to story in the tech segment, because that might actually come back and almost solve for what we're talking about here, and where the new tech inside these vehicles is actually it will notify you. So if, let's say, you're the owner of the Uber, it will tell you how, if the guy's been driving for, I mean, you shouldn't drive for more than 6 hours.
For 6 hours, I think two.
With brakes, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, and these things come in electric cars, so.
They will do indeed. Yeah. So just back to this drunk driving whole story here. It actually is quite an epidemic in the country, because I still think there's a lot of, because of the lack of infrastructure from a transport point of view, a lot of people are still taking the chance, you know, having a couple of beers and being like,
have an option. You can either Uber, you can walk, or you can drive yourself.
Yep. Just don't drink and drive.
Mm. And that's the thing. We like to party.
Yeah.
As South Africans generally do. And when you got to go home, you're faced with those three options. 5 years ago, we didn't have Uber. So you either left your car where you were and walked home.
Yeah.
Or you drove.
Or you caught it.
And 9 times out of 10, the guys chose to drive.
Yeah.
And the great thing about this EBAT vehicle is when you were arrested for drunken driving, you did a breathalyzer to confirm.
Yes.
And then they would have to take you to an off-site clinic that is manned by state-sanctioned nurses to draw the blood.
Yeah.
What would happen is, it took so long for that service center to process the blood that it would go bad. So you spent the weekend in jail, and they let you out on Monday, and you never go to court because your sample took over a year sometimes to go through testing. By that time, it's gone bad.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Your case gets chucked out.
Yeah.
And then you walk, what's going to happen? And they do it again.
Yep.
Now, we caught you. We've got it. This is admissible in court.
Yep.
You're going to jail.
Absolutely. And there the results speak for themselves, and it's legal, and this is, you
know. So, a warning to all the guys down in Cape Town. Do not drink and drive.
Yeah, don't drink and drive.
And drive, period.
End
it's
of story.
Not worth it.
Yeah. I don't know if you we know that we had a number of fuel hikes last month, and I think as drivers on the road, it certainly has it's affected my pocket. I don't know if it's affected your guys with the mileage and stuff that you do. But I see that the DA leader, Musi Maimane and Ben Theron from Outer, said they were preparing for a mass fuel protest in Pretoria. And News 24 went out and did a whole, Wheels 24 went out and did a whole research piece, just checking what the law of the land is in South Africa with regards to how users and road users are feeling about, the petrol prices that they're paying. And they asked a whole bunch of South Africans what South Africans think about fuel protests. So they asked their readers if they would support a protest over the fuel price. And the poll, they got 18,990 votes. And 69% of the people said, yes, something must be done urgently. 16% said they would join the march if they could get time off work, and 15% there's no point, the price is set in dollar terms. But I mean, do you think we're going to get to a stage where we're going to start seeing kind of mass consumer action? Because
yeah,
I mean, it's
not in this country.
You don't think so? You don't think the guys would? I mean, listen. I mean, guys have toyed and marched for less or other things. And I think, I don't know, I kind of feel like
we've been marching for ETOLs for how many years?
But that's come to that. We finally won that one, because that's the next.
It's going to be
so we can expect a fuel price decrease in about 5.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think South Africa. I mean, would you march?
I would.
Would you?
I would.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, that 15%, they were quite right. The fuel price is set.
Mm.
We're not going to change that.
Mm.
I think what everybody's really bleating about is the levy.
Yes.
That extra $4, we want to know where it's going and what it's paying for.
Because
In all honesty, we're not seeing it.
The two things need to happen. That fuel levy needs to be reduced, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, deregulation. Let everybody compete.
So let the garages compete.
Yes.
On petrol price.
Yes.
Exactly. So Cecil's running a special this weekend, and petrol's 10 rand a litre. What a pleasure.
Look,
I'm saying that's what. I mean, that's,
yes,
but
yes.
That's what.
No, because it's regulated. You're not allowed to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the States, you can go to a gas station down by your house and you pay $2.57 for a gallon, just 3.75 litres.
Yeah.
If you go to a very busy part of town, the petrol in that part of town is more expensive.
Just because
of where they are.
Yeah.
And we found it, myself and Chad found it when we were living in the States. The gas station down the road from us, where we were, was 99 cents a gallon. If you went into downtown, it was $1.75.
Well, so, I mean, you know...
Like, just because... And it was like maybe 7Ks.
Because it's not deregulated.
Yeah.
There's competition.
Yeah.
And, you know, then garage owners can use things like... You know, you can imagine if somebody's got cash and they want to invest in a filling station and they want to take slightly less margin and they want to pass it on to the consumer and they want to rather do the volumes, they don't have to finance anything in the garage. They can make their fuel price lower and they can compete.
Yeah.
You know, now because it's regulated, everybody's in the same boat.
Yeah.
We all have to charge 11 rand.
I actually don't understand why the petrol price is regulated, because the diesel price isn't.
That's a good question. Why is the petrol price regulated
and diesel isn't?
And diesel
because
isn't.
you can go to a.
I mean, I've seen
truck
you will find different diesel prices at different service stations.
And
why is it like that with diesel and not with petrol?
There's a station just down the road from my house. You can go on a Tuesday afternoon, and you get 20 cents off your tank. Per
liter. Really?
Yeah.
But that's
only on a Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah,
and only on diesel.
Yeah,
and it's crazy. I mean, these guys, their core job is to put petrol in our vehicles. But I think what they do compete in is, you know, our bread and milk's cheaper this week. You know,
and that's exactly that. My aunt actually runs a station down here.
Okay,
and she says they don't make money on petrol.
Yeah,
they make money on what they sell in the shop.
Shop
on the sweets and chocolates and chips and bread and milk and all of that stuff.
It's crazy, hey.
Anyway, so if I'm marching, if Oaks are marching,
so would I.
But there was a march last week.
They went to Pretoria.
Yeah.
Was that with regards to the petrol price?
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
They handed over a memorandum.
Oh no! This would have obviously been about that. So they actually did land up marching then.
Mm. Mm. It's quite a big one.
Oh really? No. Well, I mean,
the question is though, and I think. A lot of people would like to know the answers. Why are our neighboring countries, Lesotho, Swaziland, Botswana, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, why is their fuel cheaper than ours, and yet they're getting it from us?
Yeah.
George, didn't you explain this when you spoke to Gareth on Friday?
Why? It's because of the levy. The fuel levy. It's purely the tax. So you know, when you export the fuel across the border, the tax is effectively non-existent. It's like claiming the VAT back.
So our fuel would actually be a lot cheaper if we weren't paying for the levy. So let's march against the levy.
March against the levy.
Yeah.
I'm all for that. Well, listen, this is what's happened in Bangladesh, right? So Bangladesh teens block roads for the seventh day over road safety. Parts of the Bangladeshi capital ground to a halt for the seventh day running on Saturday as thousands of students staged protests calling for improvements to road safety after two teenagers were killed by a speeding bus.
Wow.
These teenagers have taken to the road, so much so that... thousands of students wearing school uniforms... defied rain to block major intersections in the capital from Saturday morning. Teens as young as 13 were seen in the city, notoriously they clogged down the roadways, checking whether cars and buses had valid licenses. Can you imagine being stopped by a 13-year-old and he's like, "Can I see your driver's license, please?" I think if there were one of them, it's a different story.
And you know what the government's answer to this was?
Yeah,
we're going to disable social media.
Yes, I saw
so
that.
So you guys can't talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these students want justice. They're just saying it's crazy. I mean, if you have a look
at social media alone, fix your problems.
Well, about 3 weeks ago in Pretoria, some pedestrians, I can't remember the exact details, but some pedestrians were run over.
Oh, yeah?
On a stretch of road, which is notorious for things like that. It runs right next to a township.
Okay.
And the residents of this township simply blocked the road for the next 2 weeks. Nobody could come through. And when they unblocked the road, they had actually built their own speed hump.
Oh, really?
Right,
well, good for them.
Well done. Good for them.
You need a freaking speed hump like that in my area.
Jeez,
I think I should contract them.
Some cement.
Yeah, I think I should contract these guys to put one up outside my house as well.
I think we do banter on about the show about the lawlessness of people. Mm. I mean, we stopped at a stop street on Saturday in our Uber, and there was a guy in the far right and it's turning right. Lane, and he happened to go straight to get around all of us who were queuing, and it was just so nice because he obviously didn't see the cops that were waiting and they watched him do this, and everyone was like driving past, hooting and waving and going
Can I share just a small story there? Myself and Chad were actually on our way to a racetrack on Saturday, and we were in the new Volvo XC40, and driving down the road. Robot goes orange, red. So we stopped.
Yeah.
Now I'm watching the BMW in the passenger side mirror.
Yeah. Who's behind you?
Not slowing down.
Just.
And luckily for us, there's a
slip. I get out of the right hand lane when that happens.
Luckily for us, there's a slip lane on the left hand side for turning left.
Yeah.
And this guy just kept coming, and I sort of wanted to brace for the
impact. Yeah, because you're waiting to.
And the next minute, the seatbelt's all tensioned. Pull us back in the seat, and this guy came flying past us.
So the car obviously saw that he was doing that.
And I'm like, we both sat there and just sort of looked at each other and went,
Wow.
That Volvo is amazing. The first time that we've actually experienced firsthand the safety systems in some of these cars. And I'm like, I want to go and find that guy in the BMW now and just hope that, you know, he gets nailed by the cops just like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he had no intention of stopping.
No. It's like an amber robot means you can still squeeze through nowadays. Like in the past, when you saw orange, it meant slow down,
and
stop.
And a red light isn't a command, it's a polite suggestion.
Yeah, it's a suggestion, yeah. Would you consider stopping, please?
It's like an indicator. It's not there to say, I'm going to turn. It's like I said, I've turned.
Exactly. Well, guys, I mean, we were touching those just now, but it looks like it's final. The ETOLs will be scrapped.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's fantastic, and it's all really, really nice, but we know that while they were doing it. I mean, how are we going to...
how's the government going to raise funds for the road? I mean, if we want them to
go to Dubai and fetch the 150 million that's there.
Okay, so now, what's going to happen to these gantries?
Well, this is the thing. So I think what they're saying is they're going to turn them into
speed cameras
and
traffic warning.
That's a very expensive traffic monitoring thing. But anyway, if they can put cameras up there and monitor, you know, record everything that's going on.
Happy days. I think it's cool. It's like very for expensive. Accidents and but they're gonna have to do something with it.
Yeah, you can't just take it down. I mean, you've got to use it for something.
Now you're saying so how are they gonna fund the roads? Well, even if the people did pay e-tax, they still wouldn't have funded the roads because about 70% of that was headed right across the sea into Sweden and Switzerland.
Yeah. So all that money taken out of the country.
Yep.
So, I mean, they should maybe sell these gantries to a country that will use them properly.
I wonder if someone's going to tell the people
every country that they put it up in failed.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should tell the cable recycling squads, also known as cable thieves, that there's a lot of copper in those things.
Lots of copper in those, I'm sure. Geez, like, no, well, don't say that, because then these guys will come and cut those things down and leave half the metal lying in the highway.
No, they won't. They'll pick it up because they can get money for it.
Now, I think what we're looking at is, like George said, a very expensive traffic monitoring system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I, for one, am actually for that.
Yeah.
If they can monitor traffic on the freeway and then use those illuminated boards and say, hey, there's been an accident here, expect delays. Yeah. You can sort of sit there and go, okay, well, you know, voice control, send a WhatsApp message.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I'm going to be late for the radio show, whatever.
Yep.
You know, this is a little bit far-fetched, but it's already starting to happen. Facial recognition. Mm. You know, even in the area that I live in, to get into their state, it's facial recognition.
Oh, really?
No longer fingerprint and
driver's
license, all that. It's like you drive up to the boom, recognizes your face, you live, cool, boom opens. Sure. No problem. So
that's why I was late.
So facial recognition, you know, could be something that we could use those gantries for sometime in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could. I mean, you could identify, you know, motorists who are driving crime without licenses and stuff. I can't say that I'm legal again, to let you all know.
This is not too far-fetched because facial recognition is now being used for FICA. Banks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sure, but...
So there are some instances where you don't have to, you know, to prove who you are. Mm. You don't need to provide any identity. Yeah. Just, you know, there's facial recognition involved.
But maybe it will also help with the number plate fraud and
all that.
Yeah.
It could actually also help them to track hijacked vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, we arm these, you know, the highways with cameras and we monitor the traffic.
Yeah. Nice. The infrastructure's there. They just need to repurpose it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly.
And make it work for the consumer at the end of the day. Put the consumer, you know,
but
first.
That's going to cost more.
I think they'll still find some way to make money out of it at our expense, though.
Yeah, it'll be at our expense, I think.
There will be some way for them to make money out of it.
If you don't pay the fee, then the camera doesn't scan your car. It's like you just... That's another
fancy ETOL.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so that's pretty much what's happened in the world of motoring. There was no Grand Prix this weekend. The guys were on a break.
No, it's their break now.
But there was a MotoGP. So Andrea Dovizioso beat Casey Stoner and Daniel Pedrosa, who finished in third at the Czech Republic Grand Prix this weekend. It was quite a good race. But I see there is some news coming out of Formula One, George, that I wanted to chat about. And
Ricciardo.
Yeah, I'm talking about Daniel Ricciardo, who's switching to Renault in 2019. What's the story there?
It was an absolute shocker.
Yeah. Even for Red Bull.
Yeah, even for Red Bull. And, you know, some of the news reporters had spoken to Daniel Ricciardo days before this announcement. And even Christian Horner was shocked.
Yeah.
You know, the team principal for Red Bull.
Yeah.
So, you know, the fact that he's moving to Renault is interesting because, you know, every driver wants to work, wants to drive for a works team.
Yeah,
you know, you want to drive for a works team because the manufacturer can get a lot more right. Mm. There's a lot more money behind a works team. Renault, an interesting one because Renault supplies engines to Red Bull.
Yeah.
So the fact that that he's moving to Renault means he knows something that we don't know potentially, but a big shocker. And remember, Red Bull's moving to Honda as an engine supplier next year. So I think Daniel Ricciardo is kind of, you know, weighing Renault all of this up. Yeah, no, I don't know if he likes Renault. If he just, I mean, every driver wants to win in a works team. That's what they want.
And he probably doesn't have as much faith in the Honda motors as he should.
Exactly. So
going on current records, understandable.
Yeah. You know, and the last word from him was that the final details were being ironed out in the contract. Well, those final details were quite significant. Not clearly. Sure. Clearly.
Money.
That makes the world go around, right?
So he's obviously going to be racing for Renault next year. Is there anything else that's been happening?
It was Moto 2, Moto 3.
Yes.
Brad Binder finished 6th.
Fantastic.
He's
flying the flag really, really well for us, huh? Do you think he'll step up next year, or has he got how many seasons does he have to do at Moto 2? Do you know?
I'm actually not sure. But basically, with the top team comes to you and says, "Hey,
you want
to
come ride for us?" Yeah,
then
he'll jump. Well, we're behind him all the way. Guys, let's get into. We know that we touched on that kind of Ponzi scheme topic. 2 weeks ago, there was a dealership, Carte Blanche had a story, blah, 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 and they caught a dealer who was selling packages to consumers, but at the end of the day, it looked like a bit of a Ponzi scheme. And I think what I just wanted to highlight, and if we can just maybe discuss it a little bit, is that in this day and age, you have got a wealth of knowledge at your fingertips called the internet. And if any deal, and you guys will know this, any deal that is too good to be true,
it probably is.
So I mean, you know, do you think people are actually using the internet? I mean, we see it a lot with the users that come to our site. We know how much time they're spending on our site, but I don't think there are people out there who still go, "Oh, well, it sounds like a fantastic deal. Let's go ahead and do it," and they're not actually researching it. So, I mean, yeah, let's just get your opinion on using the internet as a research tool. Like, I mean, you spoke about you knew exactly what you wanted to buy prior
and
to
I knew,
going.
And I knew what they cost
exactly.
The advent of pricing transparency in cars. Mm-hmm. And it's happening faster than everybody thinks, and the internet drives transparency.
Correct.
So the advent of pricing transparency means that if a car is going for significantly less than the converged average,
correct,
or significantly more,
then
there's a problem.
Absolutely,
there's a massive red flag.
Yeah,
and manufacturers don't and dealerships don't have that much margin in new cars.
Yeah.
It's not like they can discount these cars significantly. The margin in new cars is very, very thin.
Mm-hmm.
So the consumer should still beware. And with pricing transparency, it's even easier to do. You know, you can go on Auto Trader site and go and look at what every other car is going for and compare.
Yeah.
And that convergence of the price point should tell you a lot about whether there's a red flag or not.
So, I mean, a couple of hundred rand here and there, then you're kind of dealing with.
Yes.
But, I mean, if you're talking, this one's 20,000 rand and the mileage is the same, then you know that there's something wrong with it.
Ask some questions.
Although, don't discount the power of manufacturer-sponsored trade assistance. I mean, you can buy a Hilux for like 60 grand discount.
You know what that's called? It's called a bubble.
Yeah.
It's called a bubble.
Mm.
And, as soon as there's too much of this kind of thing going on, that bubble eventually bursts. And then what happens? The second-hand price point of that car plummets because nobody freaking can sell it.
Yeah.
So everything has a demand and supply in terms of economics.
Yeah. And I think that ties into the second point here, which is take your time. Don't rush. I mean, it probably is the second biggest
purchase
that you're going to make,
and most of the time financed.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So therefore, you're in for the bank finance as well, which means that it's hard to get out of a car within 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, well, I think that's a point that we'll touch on just now, George. So we'll hang on to your comments about that. And then they talk about your number three, skimping on the test drive. How important is it to test drive a vehicle? Now, let me ask you.
You never buy a car without test drive.
Okay, but now let me ask you this question from my point of view in terms of not being someone who is. I'm not a petrol head. I don't know what to listen for. If the car feels like it's driving nicely, then I'm kind of like, hey, it's a cool car. But you guys getting into a car would hear something that I probably wouldn't pick up. So, I mean, what would the recommendation be? Take somebody who actually knows something about the cars and put them in the car with you and go for the drive.
I send somebody who knows, a lot about cars, actually rebuilds cars, to go and check out the car that I bought.
Just to make sure that everything is actually like that dealership says it is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, guys like Martin and Lawrence, can they drive cars for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
So therefore, you know, if there's a knock or a noise, they'll quickly yeah. notice it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if nothing else, if you don't have that kind of access to somebody that can drive a car and notice what's going on with it,
yeah.
Make sure that it's got sufficient warranty left on its plan for as a second-hand car, and check its accident history. If you go into Auto Trader and do a history check on the vehicle,
yes.
you can in most instances pick up an accident.
Okay,
and you get a lot of fancy tools today that can check paint.
Yeah,
you know, and make sure you park the car in the sun when you check it out, because the sun is going to reveal a lot of flaws.
Okay,
that you might not be able to see in the shade or inside the dealership.
Yeah. Absolutely. Do you guys want to add anything to that?
I mean, my brother is currently in the market for a secondhand car.
Okay.
And I've been dragged around
to
numerous dealerships with him. And he has X amount of money to spend. And he also is a little bit auto illiterate, let's put it that way. And he doesn't know what to look for.
Yeah.
So, you know, we did a test drive in a 1 Series BMW. And, you know, I ran him through because okay, stop the car, pull up the handbrake. Mm. Now pull away. If the handbrake doesn't work, it's going to fail the road with you.
Yeah.
You know? Do a little bit of left foot braking. See if the front brakes will hold the car. Now drive slowly and now listen for any knocks, bumps, dings, squeaks, whatever. And then the last thing you do is you get the VIN number of the car. And you use one of the multitude of tools that are available on Auto Trader.
Yes.
And do a VIN check on the car.
Yeah.
It costs you $99.
Yeah.
And it will give you the full history of the car.
Yeah.
And you'll know that it's a 2004. It was a rep mobile.
Mm.
Warranty ran, or the service plan ran out at 185. It's on 245 now. So there's 80,000 kilometers worth of unknown mileage.
Yeah.
And then you can sort of weigh up whether it's worth your time or not. Mm. And then you can ask a couple of mechanics, find out what kind of replacement cost.
Yeah.
You can even do that with the Kinsey report.
When you when you go into a dealership, does the sales guy have to come with you on the test drive?
Yes.
Yeah. In today's day and age, they
it's entirely up to the dealership to decide.
Sure.
But 99% of the time they would.
Yeah. I just kind of find that maybe is a little bit off-putting, because this like might, you know, he's obviously talking to you. His job is to sell the car at the end of the day. So you got to give him his due as well. I mean, you know,
but he'll know. He'll get in the car with you, and he'll start checking, and you start doing your tests.
Yeah,
and he'll know. Oh, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about.
They generally don't like us very much.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't.
The guy gave me a couple of sideways glances, because when I walked onto the the floor and I was branded in my Auto Trader clothing, he just
God, I don't know. One of these guys, huh?
Yeah,
petrolhead.
Ooh,
do you think a lot of people buy cars that actually don't suit their needs?
They get coerced into it by the sales guys, and it's unfortunate, but with a lot of people, they've now got the money. I've got the money, I need to buy a car, I'm going to get mobile, and they don't do due diligence and do end up getting talked into something that maybe they don't want,
or can't afford.
Well, I think and a lot of guys you'll probably find are buying the car based on, oh, I can afford that monthly repayment, fantastic, happy days, but then you get hit with the maintenance and the upkeep and, you know, servicing and stuff like that, and that's where you kind of fall short. That's where you start scratching.
Actually applies to most cars, but specifically to bargain priced German cars.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you can afford it, see if you have an extra 1,500 rand lying around every month, and take that and put it into a separate account, because when something goes wrong, it will cost a lot.
Phoned Martin and said, okay dude, I gave him the rundown on the car, because the car had one issue, and I was like, okay, is this something that we were discussing earlier? And he's like, ah, oh, no, it's just a minor issue, but have it checked before you put down the money.
Run the
actually walked away from the deal because the OBD2 report was inconclusive.
Oh,
yeah. And then just to touch on trading in your old car versus selling it privately, clearly there's a time thing there and it's a convenience thing. I mean, that's what I would put it down to.
And safety as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of channels in today's day and age, right? So you've got, the first option, sell it privately.
Correct.
Okay. Highest risk.
Yes.
And you do all the stuff yourself.
Correct.
Which means that you'll more than likely get market related prices.
Okay.
Now, a lot of private sellers think that they can get a higher price than the market average or a higher price than a dealership. You can't.
No.
It'll chase buyers away.
Yeah.
You know, pricing transparency, as I said, is making prices of cars converge.
Yes.
You can't sell a car today above its market value.
Yes.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Whether you're a private seller or whether you're a dealership, it's very hard to do.
Mm.
Unless that car is extremely clean and high demand, low supply,
yes,
all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So the first option is sell it privately.
Okay.
Right? But you got to accept that you can only get the average market price for it.
Yeah.
Plus the buyer, you know, is also going to see a bit of the risk.
Mm-hmm.
The second option is sell it to a car buying service.
Yes.
Okay. Which is probably, you know, it's easy to do and it's quick.
Yeah. Well, let's just take this in the context of Auto Trader. So you spoke about privately. So that's kind
Auto
of,
Trader
you know,
can do,
the,
yes.
Yeah, Auto Trader privates, yeah. You know, you so sell and which, then we sell.
Which is the traditional kind of, you know, avenue is to sell the car privately on autotrader.co.za, take all the risk and do all the paperwork, do it all yourself. But I think my point is that you can't get above market prices.
Correct.
Yeah, you can only get an average price. And then or sell it to a car buying service.
Yes.
Which is means you're going to turn around really quickly. You're not going to get a market-related price in terms of the selling price and market prices on the internet. Just accept it.
Mm.
The third option is Auto Trader can help you sell the car privately.
Yes.
We do all the paperwork. We do all that stuff, and we help you reduce the risk.
Correct.
Because a lot of the risk is in meeting buyers and sellers. We do all that all that schlep.
Yeah.
And then obviously the alternative option is sell it to a dealership.
Ship.
And there you're going to get trade-in prices. And again, you are not going to get a market-related price.
Yeah.
You are going to get a trade-in related price, which is also okay.
Mm.
And you need to be okay with
Let's just touch on the private verified vehicles and that we have at Auto Trader under our, we've got YouSell, which we spoke about, there's the privates, and then there's WeSell, which is where we actually do the legwork for the seller.
For the seller, yeah.
And I think that's really nice in terms of a convenience. Yes, it costs you a little bit of money, but I think the peace of mind that you get knowing that vehicle has been checked, it's approved, you know, everything has been done to make that vehicle as attractive as it can be to a potential buyer, which is really, really cool.
These are criteria. If you want to sell the car and Auto Trader helps you sell that car privately, there is a set of conditions.
Correct.
We're not just going to sell anything.
No, absolutely.
Because if we can't sell it, you know, we don't want to sell things that are unsellable.
Yeah.
You know, we'll also check the price of the car, and if the consumer wants too much for it, in terms of selling it, we'll rather just say, sorry, we can't we can't do this for you.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that price, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah. Cool. And then just so we've spoken about just focusing on the installment. And buying new versus used, I mean, most people know that when you buy a new car, if you drive it off the dealership floor, it does lose a little bit of its value. And I think into today's world, I think if I read an article the other day done by Lightstone, and they talk about the aging car, universe in South Africa, the car park, and I think it's actually a little bit older now. It was 9.2 years, now it's at about 9.9, so just under 10 years. But used is, I think,
well, in every market besides India,
yes,
okay, used is bigger than new,
okay,
by at least 2 times,
okay.
And that's because cars don't, You don't burn them after 3 years.
Correct.
So they have a lifespan that's longer than 3 to 5 years. So therefore, it makes sense that the used car market is bigger than the new car market.
Mm.
And in most first world countries, and in our country, the used market is bigger than the new market.
Yeah.
But that value you were talking about, when you finance a car, particularly with a residual, you are going to battle to get your money back.
Yeah.
In 3 years, you have to wait for the relative prices to stabilize and for you to pay that car down. After probably 2 to 3 years, before you're going to get, you're going to see the amount that you owe on the car be equal to the value of the car. Other than that, you're going to take a slight loss.
Yeah, it's crazy, but I think is the stigma attached to vehicles still the same as was it was? Is that Is that right? As what it was 10, 15 years ago. I don't, you know?
Stigma of what?
Like the type of car you drive, you know, or driving a second-hand car.
No, I mean, you know.
Because at the end of the day, it's a new car. For me, in my world, it's a new car.
It's a new car. I mean, I don't think so. South Africans, traditionally, I think, are very, very car conscious and image conscious people.
Yes.
So therefore, the car that we drive seems to, you know, internally inside ourselves, say a lot about who we are.
Yeah.
And I think that still exists. Mm. You know, the future generations are probably not going to think that way.
Yeah, because it's
it's going to be like, I need to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And that's it. And if I want to drive a fancy car, go hire one.
Exactly. Talking about fancy cars, Martin, you've been driving the Jaguar XJR 575, the beast. Is it that good?
He's not sighing because he's happy. He's sighing because
it's
poor.
Gone. I'm sighing because I'm poor and they took it away.
And they took it away. And you had that car. How long did you have it for?
For a week.
Oh, and they really are. I mean, listen, you know, having worked for the brand, I've driven some of their cars. Yeah. Really, really
spectacular. And he's now $2,000 poorer.
Yep. Why? What happened?
Because it drinks.
Oh, is it a thirsty bugger?
No, 5 litre V8.
Oh,
yeah, with a supercharger. Now, for some context.
Yes.
Let's go back about 20 years.
Absolutely.
When I received a grant from another institution for my final years of study, and the official who came around to hand over this grant arrived in his brand new Jaguar XJR. Now, at that stage, it was still a supercharged six-cylinder.
Yes.
And he saw I was a car nut, and he actually tossed me the keys, and I managed to score a test drive in this almost brand new Jaguar. Obviously with the owner next to me. And that was the first car I ever drove with more than 200 kilowatts. And it was the first car I ever drove that could light up the traction control light all the way up to the speed limit. Now, that's more of a function of, the poor tire technology 20 years ago than the actual power.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've always had this special bond with specifically the XJR. So when this one fell in my lap, I was in heaven.
Mm.
But to see how that model has evolved and changed over the last two decades.
Yeah.
I mean, this new one, quite literally, probably has about double the power of the old one.
Well, the XJ was, I mean, that's kind of, I mean, if you had to compare that to a Mercedes-Benz, it would be like the 7 Series, am
I
right?
The S-Class 7 Series. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, and it was it was kind of a car where you would, you know, have your butler and you would sit in the back, and that was the kind of the vibe of
XJ. Jaguar put some double espresso in the decaf machine, and they made the XJR.
Yes,
I must say, I've not, up to now, I've not been a Jaguar fan.
Okay,
you're missing out.
No, I mean,
well, they have an electric coming soon.
Brilliant, even better. Probably why. But I think for me, the Jag has always been an Aston Martin wannabe.
Because it was designed by the same guy.
Mm.
So I've always seen it as like, you're trying to look like the Aston Martin. Whereas now, they're starting to look a little bit more like the Bentley.
Well, look, about your Aston Martin thing, that's like criticizing a girl for looking too much like Cameron Diaz.
Well, they all want her.
But if she does,
then
all the better.
Happy days, exactly, yeah. Sign me up!
Yeah, but they never really...
You haven't seen pictures of Cameron Diaz lately.
They never really executed the Aston Martin look. Never really, in my opinion anyway.
Well,
they never really executed the Aston Martin look, and maybe it's because I'm just I like Aston Martin, but this XJR 575 is a beautiful car.
And it's just as beautiful to drive.
And it looks a little bit like the Bentley.
Again. Too much like Cameron Diaz.
There you go. Well, listen, just tell us how Cameron Diaz drives, please.
Well, you're actually quite correct when you say it's almost an Aston Martin, because in terms of the driving experience, it's also more of a sports car than a 5.1 meter long luxury saloon.
Yeah.
The steering and the handling and everything is very, very much like a sports car. You'd never guess it weighs just shy of 1.9 tons.
Jeez. Yeah, but what power plant has it got inside?
A nuke. Basically,
a nuke. It's got a Tesla rocket. No, not a Tesla rocket. It's got a SpaceX rocket.
It's a supercharged 5 liter V8, and it has literally all the power you could possibly want. 423 kilowatts, 700 newton meters. Lawrence, when we filmed the video last week, he briefly drove with me, and he was basically white as a sheet after half a block.
And that was because you were driving.
I was just touching the accelerator. Now, okay, some interesting specs on this car. Its top speed is limited to 300 kilometers an hour.
In South Africa?
No. That's they can't find tires to handle a higher top-end speed on a car with that weight.
Wow.
Jeez luck.
Of that size.
Wow.
So it's limited to 300, and it runs a 0 to 100 in 4.2 seconds. And that's not as fast as you'd expect,
I would
right?
Thought. Yeah. I mean, you're getting that kind of you're getting that kind of acceleration out of SUVs now.
Yeah, but there's a good reason for that. It's wheel spinning all the way up to 90 k's an hour. It cannot put all that power down.
Yeah.
It really only gets going from 100 k's an hour up. It's now only rear-wheel drive.
Probably part of the problem.
That's the largest part of the problem.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, with only rear-wheel drive, it scores on the weight front. So it's not as heavy as it could be. And also because it's an aluminium body. It's a full aluminium construction. So
gearbox?
It's not as heavy as it could be. Yeah. 8-speed automatic. ZF
8-speed
box.
Auto. And the shift synchronization?
Oh, perfect. Perfect. And actually, Jaguar managed to program this auto box to almost approximate that semi-violent kick you get with a twin clutch. In sport mode or dynamic mode, they call it.
Yeah.
It almost gives you that kind of that same kind of kick.
Yeah.
As it shifts gears, but it has extremely tall gearing. I mean, first gear runs up to 80 k's an hour, and second runs well past 110.
So why do you need 8?
I think this is the first time I've ever heard Martin gush.
Oh, come on, I can't stop it. I'm absolutely
I've heard Martin
in love
gush
with that
just,
car.
You know, they seem to be bringing out cars lately that beat the previous gush.
And Mart, what's the price tag on this puppy?
Well, before we get to that,
okay.
Before we get to that, the whole thing is trimmed. It's literally lined in leather from
the stitch leather is beautiful.
No, listen,
from
Jaguar have always done great
interiors. From the deep carpets underneath, all the way up to the roof lining.
Yeah.
Everything is lined in leather. The roof lining is in suede. The seats
you
are,
say that with such suave.
Oh, it's just so lovely
it's
to
because
touch.
You sat stroking the roof for half an hour.
Ty, you might think you're joking, but you're actually absolutely
right.
Correct.
I'd probably do the same thing.
And beautiful quilted stitching on the seats and carbon fiber trim instead of wood because this is the sporty one.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't like that wood. I wish I'd get rid of it in every freaking car.
Exactly. So this one has like polished carbon fiber inserts where the wood would be in the normal ones.
Lovely.
And it's like polished like they would polish the walnut and the others. Now, all of that is yours for only 2.6 million rand.
Jeez,
and that's the problem.
Price of a Ferrari?
No, a second-hand Ferrari.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
But then you think, okay, it wants to be an Aston Martin. And in that context, it's actually a bargain because it's like 1.5 million less expensive than Rapide. Rapide S. It's about 1.5 million rand less expensive than that. And it has a lot more space and a bigger boot. So there we go. It's a practical car as well.
Practical car as well.
Just get a Tesla. It's a lot cheaper and faster.
Yeah, but it doesn't go... <like that>.
You've been practicing that.
It's all that heavy breathing that he's
that's
been doing.
Exactly. He's been sitting inside that thing saying, how am I going to make the sound?
Exactly. I can see if you were in Studio 9, you could see the man's face. The guy is literally
salivating.
In love with the vehicle.
It is a fantastic
And I can understand
car.
Why.
The
I really
thing that
can.
Really struck me, though, is that basic design is 9 years old already.
Oh, wow.
So this generation of XJ was launched in 2009. Okay, it had some updates in the meantime, new engines and more and more and more and more and more power until it gets to the point where it goes...
Yeah.
But it's funny enough, I still found it more comfortable to ride in and better to drive than any of the other top-class saloons.
Sure.
And that's quite an accolade because there's some really, really accomplished competition in
absolutely.
There. So I think what they did is they took one of their best cars... And they optimized it, and then they threw a nuke under the bonnet.
Sure.
Fantastic. So when can we expect the S-Class versus LS 500 versus
Funny
Jaguar
you should
XJR
mention
500.
That. Funny you should mention that, seeing as I've driven them all.
Yeah. The top-class sports saloons. I would like to see something.
Like a shootout?
Yeah.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. No, I'll do these comparisons for the website.
I want to be the guy that gets you on the line and then runs away and flashes a torch.
Somebody's been watching too much TV.
Too much TV.
Yeah. Well, final parting thought.
Yes.
If you turn off, or not turn off the stability control, because then you'll die.
Yeah.
But if you, it has an intermediate setting called track DSC, which keeps the stability control in, but it turns off the traction control, and you will not believe it.
So it lets you have fun, but not too much fun.
Yeah, but you leave this Jaguar in normal mode on the engine. You leave the suspension, everything else in normal mode. You leave the gearbox in drive, and you just stand on the throttle, and it will lay down rubber for as long as you have the guts to keep that atmosphere buried.
You didn't hear that, Sunzi.
Incredible.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Jeez, luck. You might have to organize a drive in that. Sounds really, really awesome.
Well, Mark, thanks very much for that. The article is on site, am I right?
It's not on site yet. It's being edited now, so it will be on the site either today or tomorrow.
Fantastic. Awesome. Happy days. That sounds great. Guys, it's strange that this hasn't happened sooner in our time, but are vehicle dealerships, are you going to go and choose your next car in a shopping center? And I think you've spoken about this at Lib. It just makes complete sense to me, and I don't know why it hasn't happened before. I mean, I could quite comfortably see a Mercedes-Benz dealership, a Lexus, a Volvo, a Jaguar in Sandton City.
There's already a mini dealership, I think it's a Renault, in Menlyn.
Oh, right. Like a pop-up shop?
Yeah, two cars standing in there, you walk in, have a look, speak to the salesperson, they walk around.
I mean,
the
this
car.
Is already happening overseas. So Subaru has opened a dealership in a shopping center in Melbourne, Australia, and now Hyundai has opened a dealership in a shopping center in Kent in the United Kingdom. Tesla has a dealership at the Westfield Shopping Center in London, to name but a few examples. And if you think about it, dealers obviously rely heavily on footfall.
Yeah, so I mean, the fact of the matter is that today's consumer shopping for a car is the behavior on other shopping channels and other shopping behavior is starting to translate to the expectation by the consumer that the shopping experience for a car should be the same as my shopping experience for shoes.
Absolutely.
I must be able to search in a similar way because, you know, I must be able to translate that behavior. And once a consumer starts to shop for, you know, different consumer electronics and consumer goods online, they then go and look for that in a shopping center if they want it immediately.
Correct.
Why not a car?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it makes complete sense. Look, I think there's a downside to this is you're going to have a lot of tire kickers. You're going to have a lot of people who are, you know, bored husbands because, you know, the missus is doing the grocery shop.
That's all right.
And you're gonna be in a dealership. Now, you might be wasting some sale guys', you know, time, but I think even from a brand point of view, it just makes sense. I think the biggest problem that the dealerships are going to have with this is, and I still don't know why we don't trade cars, why dealerships aren't open on Sundays, because I don't think a lot of people have got a lot of time during the week because you're working 9 to 5 to actually go and do a car shop. So, you know, are they gonna change their trading hours?
Well, I suppose that's why they open on Saturdays, right?
Yeah, they open on Saturdays, but they probably close, what time do they normally close? 2-3 o'clock? Mm-hmm. You know, close early on a Saturday. That's very, very old school mentality. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you ever look at dealerships in the States, it's like 24/7, 365.
Shopping centers dictate the store's trading hours, right? So dealerships have to kind of succumb to that and stick to the store's trading hours, which means Sundays as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think that trading times are a big deal here. It's more the consumer shopping behavior and realizing that consumers shop online, they make their decisions, and then they want to go and look for a dealership. And the easiest place to go is, well, let me go and do my groceries. And
I'm going to go buy a Merc and just pick up a thing of eggs, my love. Yeah.
And the reason that this makes sense is because of where the consumer is in their shopping journey at the point at which they go and visit the dealership.
Correct.
It is at a very serious moment.
Absolutely.
Less tire kicking than you would think.
Yeah.
But it's at a point where I know what I want.
I've shortlisted two. Correct.
The shopping center has both those cars. Let me go there. And I'll do my grocery shopping and I'm going to go and check out my car.
Just call it a husband caretaking facility.
It would be. I mean, can you imagine sitting in a Merc dealership and they got the rugby on, there's good coffee and, you know, happy days.
Yeah, jungle gym, it's fun.
Yeah, jungle gym. Yeah, well, listen.
If Jaguar had a dealership, I'd sit in an extra or on the floor and I'd watch the rugby on the center screen.
There we go.
Just put Martin next to an XJR and you'd be fine.
Happy as Larry. Guys, on that note, thanks very much. It's been a fantastic show. Fazana, Lawrence, Martin, George, thanks very much.
Cheers, buddy.
Again, it's in 2 weeks' time, we got a show. We're going to be talking Festival of Motoring. And George will probably have a new addition to the family. So if we don't, I mean, I know we'll speak to you before then, but not on the show. But best of luck. It's an amazing journey and just enjoy it. It really is a good ride.
Appreciate that.
All right. And good luck to your wife, Kerry, as well with that. Okay. Until next time, guys. Catch you.
This is CliffCentral.com.